Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Hi, this is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker and the rest of our crew, Cal Carson and Ed Rudell. And we've got a great lineup of guests today. We're going to be talking about Doug Song at Duo Security and a tremendous success that they're having in Ann Arbor. We'll also be looking at the crack virus that has been hitting routers and seeing how it'll affect you possibly and how to get around that. All that coming up, plus answering your questions on the Internet Advisor. Stay tuned. Once again, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Delighted to be able to bring you this podcast version of our show. As you may have heard us talking about it, we are not regularly on WJR when the football games are being played because these big guys in green and white outfits are stomping all over the field and tackling their opponents. In the meantime, we're getting out of the way kind of on the sidelines here, but we're continuing to do our Internet Advisor show. And we're delighted to have the crew in studio and available to us, Mr. Gary Baker down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Gary, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Great. It's wonderful down here.
All right. Glad to hear that. He is aboard the Shared Adventure. And matter of fact, if you go to our InternetAdvisor.net page and scroll to the bottom there, you'll see a picture of the ship. And that's where Gary is working and even on the weekends works by taking folks out on a little tour. Well, you tour the Fort Lauderdale area there?
We share the adventure, any adventure that they want to have. So whole idea is come share our adventure with us. So.
Yeah, last weekend it was, the gender. That was it.
Yeah. I'm getting old, Foster. We had a baby gender reveal party. I had no idea what that was. We had somebody call up and say, can we do that on your boat? We said, we guess so. What is it?
Any excuse for a party, I guess.
Of course.
That used to be called a baby shower, by the way. I think that was Ed Rudell.
It seemed like a lot more fun.
Ed Rudell, who is here in studio with us, is part of our crew, and also I'm looking right across him. He's engineering now as well. I mean, a man of many, many talents, Cal Carson.
What else could I have? So much fun for so little money.
It's so very little money. Oh, God bless you for
it. But it's good to hear from Gary and everything going on down there. And I'm glad Foster brought up last week's party. If he had not, he would have been disingenuous.
Well, hey, listen, guys, we're going to jump ahead in our schedule a little bit because we have a unique opportunity to talk with somebody who has recently been in the news and who has been on the air with us on a number of other occasions, but right now is being recognized for a real milestone that he and his company have achieved in venture capital. And that is Mr. Doug Song, who is one of the co-founders of Duo Security, is with us. Doug, welcome to the Internet Advisor again. Good to have you here.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, and congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
Lots of good PR. Now, as I understand it, your security firm, Duo Security, is now reached kind of a record in our there's nobody else close to this record, is there, of $1 billion in valuation?
Well, you know, here in Ann Arbor, there was a company called Esperion. They were the inventors of Lipitor, and they sold to Pfizer for about $1 billion. But I guess technically, since we're $1.17 billion, we are the most valuable privately held venture-backed company in the state. So that is a new record, apparently, for Michigan.
No, I was just going to say, you know, this is amazing because there are so many security companies. Tell us a little bit about what your company does and you know, how you're able to help your customers.
Sure. So, you know, what we do is we help organizations protect against breach, but increasingly attackers are no longer going after systems, but going after users. So more and more, you know, the smartest attackers are realizing that organizations are almost inside out these days, where their people are on social media, they're accessible via email, and more generally, you know, their organizations are not just within the four walls of the building. They include partners, they include vendors, and that distributed trust means that it's very easy, actually, for attackers to attack a person, to find their path of access in, and then steal the company's data back out. And so we help defend the organizations against those kind of user target attacks by making sure that we verify who the user is and all the conditions of their access, what kind of device they have, and whether it's safe enough to access the resources that are being requested.
Very interesting. I'm just curious, Doug, have you had to deal with this most recent scare, if you will, the crack virus, for better lack of a better term?
Yeah. Well, actually, we wrote up a nice piece on this, if you have any readers out there who are looking for more detail on that vulnerability. But on our blog, duo.com/blog,
okay,
we have a full just technical write-up on the vulnerability and what it means. But the basic story there is that any wireless network, utilizing what we thought was a safe protocol, WPA2, actually is vulnerable for attackers being able to intercept all the communications and decrypt all the traffic without actually having access to the Wi-Fi password. And so that's actually not a not a good situation to be in, where all of our wireless networks are sort of raining our data out all across the air. But it's not something that affects us or what we do directly. Mostly what we do is ensure that when people are logging in and trying to access the data, whether it's an on-premise application or whether it's in the cloud, that we can actually validate user with a second form of authentication.
Uh-huh.
And so even if someone has stolen your password, for instance, we can still verify that the user is who they say they are, because, for instance, they don't have your phone or some other physical token or way to, again, validate your identity.
This is, and underlining again, Doug, and we're going to take a break in just a moment here, but this is underlining the value of a dual-factor authentication, am I right?
Yeah, I think that's really what we've mostly been known for over the last 7 years since we started. Increasingly, though, as we've added more to our product portfolio and the things that we do for our customers, the bigger mission that we're actually on is really to help organizations successfully manage and secure a modern workforce where, the mix of devices that people have are no longer just owned by the company, and they're no longer things that the organization, can manage directly. They really have to share the responsibility with their users, and we provide ways in which those kind of devices can be made safe for access to corporate data.
Excellent. Doug Song is our guest here. He is the one of the co-founders of something called Duo Security in Ann Arbor, and the headline was Ann Arbor Security Firm Now Worth $1 Billion. When we come back, Doug, I have a question that somebody has posed to me that I want to pass on to you. We're continuing talking about Doug and the success of his venture capital. Welcome again to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, co-host, along with Mr. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and Cal Carson. And thank you again, Cal, for doing a great job of the engineering here. Our guest in this first segment of the program is Doug Song, who was one of the co-founders of Duo Security in Ann Arbor, where they recently made headlines by securing $1 billion worth of venture capital. And
it was $70 million of venture capital, but a $1.1 billion evaluation. Isn't that right, Doug?
Yes, that's right.
$1.7 billion. Okay.
What are you going to do with the $70 million?
Yeah, well, our intention is to continue to invest in the innovation that we deliver to our customers, to make sure that we expand our global reach. We're a company with about 10,000 customers now in over 100 countries. And so we are looking to make sure that we continue to serve all the folks we could possibly serve to protect. And the last is to make sure that we do it in an enduring way, where we're building a lot of the infrastructure to build a company really for the ages. And that's something that with kind of hyper growth that we've had, we have a bit to catch up to ourselves, in terms of even in the physical space. So,
You mentioned 10,000 companies. Many of those are not small companies. You know, companies like Facebook, Toyota, right? These are large companies. You kind of say, "Oh, yeah, that's one company," and that's you've always been so understated, Doug. It's just wonderful. But I've heard you talk a little bit about, you know, L.A. is about fame, Washington D.C. is about power, and you said Ann Arbor's about
two things actually. I think you know most people know Michigan for well, it depends on what angle you're coming from. Almost everybody knows U of M for the learning, right? It's a we're in cultural learning. It's the cottage industry of this place, really. But the second is really football, you know, the team. And, for me, there's that really does describe, you know, our culture in a nutshell. You know, we're building a culture that is learning, you know, how to be successful in the face of some very, very, you know, long lasting and very successful competitors. But does so in a way that I think is highly differentiated. Because if you consider the coast, you know, people in New York or the East Coast or people in California, I feel like there's something of a mercenary culture, a little bit more like every person is out for themselves. The way I kind of describe it is, you know, California, where a lot of my friends and former colleagues are, it's something of a wine state, right? But Michigan is a beer state. And for me, there's a lot that implies, right, in terms of how we treat each other. You know, people, no matter who you are or what, you know, how you operate, what level, we treat each other equally. Right. And we tend to lock arms and work together to accomplish great things. And I think that's why, in my opinion, you know, Michigan has had an even more successful history of innovation than in places like California, where I know that there's a lot of focus on Silicon Valley these days. But as I say, you know, they sort of pioneered sort of in one area. They've done really well, cranking out a bunch of tech companies. But you consider Michigan, we haven't just cranked out a bunch of companies. We've created a whole bunch of industries. And this is something that I think, you know, is sort of unique about, you know, what's here. And the fact that people take a long-term view of what success looks like. And I think they do so because they're looking out for each other. You know, you can't go very far in Michigan with a bad reputation and hide out from each other. Whereas in California or New York, you know, you can sort of, it's amazing sort of what people get away with.
Do you think we're, in that sense, Doug Song, by the way, is our guest here. He's the one of the co-founders of Duo Security in Ann Arbor. Do you think in that sense that you are changing the nature of this business precisely because of the kind of impact that you're having?
Yeah, well, I certainly hope to, because I think, you know, the challenge in security has been that, unfortunately, there's somewhat of a perverse incentive set up where, you know, security has become everybody's problem today, right? It used to only be the banks and the hospitals and folks with lots of money and lots of stuff to protect. But these days, you're just as much a target of chance as you are a target of choice, given the way that it's become so easy for attackers to just spread, you know, their attacks out of the email or the web or so forth to get to you. And so our belief is that we have to democratize security. We have to make it something that every organization is capable of achieving, and without a lot of cost, without a lot of headache, because this stuff is complicated and it's hard to stay ahead. But like I say, you know, the perverse incentive there is that so many companies in security can do well by admiring the problem and not actually solving it. Because, you know, if they simply solve the problem, there'd be less dependency potentially on them for additional products and services. And from our perspective, you know, that's why. And even our branding is, you know, it's a little tough for us being in Ann Arbor to have green as a corporate color, but you know,
yeah, that's the problem.
But the reason we do is because, you know, so many of our competitors, they have, you know, kind of red and black, and it's kind of fear-based kind of branding and messaging.
I get you.
People into buying things, and we'd rather just green light a path through all that chaos for our customers.
I love it. By the way, Duo, the company itself, is a software as a service or SaaS company. They recently exceeded 10,000 customers worldwide, and they're kind of a flagship project of two-factor authentication available in an app to secure more than 300 million logins a month. I want to check with you on something. This is a comment that came from the Michigan Venture Capital Association and our friends at MI Tech News as well, Mike Brennan, that looking at the amount of value that you folks have been able to accumulate, this is kind of the noise that companies make just before they're about to go public as an IPO. Is that a possibility?
You know, nothing's off the table. You know, I think our focus right now is really to build, as I say, an enduring company. You know, make sure that we're set up for the long haul. Because this is a legacy that you know, I'd like to have.
I gotcha.
Not only for myself and our family, but for our state. And so we're really focused on doing the best we can for the customers that we serve. And at some point, you know, we'll see what that looks like.
Yep, I love that.
Hey, Doug.
You know, Cal had a question for you.
You know, Doug, with the advent of possibility of Amazon coming to the state, and I hear Foxconn is still not off the table as it stands right now. Those larger companies coming in, does that give you more opportunities from a security standpoint? In the sense that not only will the big companies come in, but all the other supporting companies that go along with it that have to work in coordination with them, how does that all play into the picture?
Yeah, we don't really sell in a traditional manner, you know, going outbound or visiting people physically initially to sell them. So the proximity to customers is actually not the most important thing for us. And these days, the way that software is sold, you know, you're finding that more and more to be true globally. But I think the thing it really does for us to have something like Amazon or another major anchor employer here, of which, you know, there are several already today. You know, I think in Ann Arbor, it's, I think the largest software employer is Thomson Reuters, actually. And in Detroit, it's obviously, you know, Quicken Loans and CompuWare. But a rising tide floats all boats. And, you know, one thing that we do a little bit differently, for instance, than any company that we know of here in Michigan, is we don't have non-competes. Our people. If anyone wants to leave Duo and go spin up a directly competing company, great.
Oh, you know, I see. Fine. I'm sorry. We missed that last word. You don't have non-competes, which is, but those are rather typical, as a matter of fact, the business. But, yeah.
Yeah, most companies have them. I just fundamentally believe that we shouldn't have any, I have no claim to what any of my people do, you know, after they leave our company. And in fact, if they leave us, they go compete against us. Well, then I screwed up. So, you know, the way I look at this is, you know, and actually the only state out of all 50, the only state in the union that actually doesn't have non-competes legally is California. And I think it actually does something for them in that, you know, you see lots of companies that are built spin up. And if people are poorly behaved or don't do well in one company, they can go and create another. And you get that sort of natural evolution of lots of, you know,
I love
lots
it.
Of happening at once.
Yeah, I love it. Just tangentially, I see that in an article that was written about your company that you see Zingerman's as an inspiration. How so?
Yeah, those guys are great. So if you're not familiar with Zingerman's, but I'm guessing most people are by now, they're sort of a force of nature, right? I don't know if they have PhDs, but they're just like everyone else here in Ann Arbor. But they are basically food PhDs, right? Yep. temple to food there. And what they really built is an amazing organization, and one where, you know, they lead with their values in ways that they keep people there and help them grow along with them.
Mm-hmm.
That for me is, you know, the foundation of the kind of business that we want to be, not just in terms of what value we deliver to our customers, but what kind of platform of opportunity we've created for our people. Because ultimately, you know, I don't want Duo just to be a great company to work at. You know, there are a lot of those, right? Lots of places where, you know, it's a good job and they take care of you and you could do well. But I want to be a great company ultimately to have been from, where the things that people have done in their careers here have led them to greater success, whether it's still here at the company or whether it's outside the company.
I love that. What a great attitude to have. Gary, you were going to say something there. I'm afraid I interrupted.
Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about how Doug opened our segment, which was talking about the things that Michigan's known for, and he mentioned football. And Doug and Duo Security, I think, are just really an emblem of the type of thing that Bo Schembechler, a famed coach for Michigan, once said. And he would say, it's the team, it's the team, it's the team.
Yeah.
And ever since I've known you, Doug, and you know, when you started Duo, that was the culture you wanted to build, and you've been so successful at doing that. Congratulations.
Yeah, well, we tried very hard, but I think living in Ann Arbor, we're always living in the shadow of Beau, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely the case that, you know, that's the model of leadership, right? That of what, you know, leadership and winning looks like here.
Well, so, Doug. Yeah.
You know, the other thing he said was, those who stay will be champions. And the way you you want to stay in Ann Arbor, I certainly applaud you, and you'll certainly be a champion.
Doug,
anyway,
thank you so much.
Doug Song, thanks so much for being with us and sharing your philosophy and a great job that you've been doing. Take care, and thank you again for being on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson here, our whole gang ready for you, and delighted that you have joined us here on our podcast. And for our affiliates out there, welcome once again. It's good for us to be on the network with you with some fresh programming. I'm sure that there are a fair number of people in our studio, or in our audience rather, guys, who have had the experience of having one of these wonderful smartphones suddenly slip out of their hands, especially if they don't have a good case on it, and fall on the floor and crack, or get water damaged, or have something horrible happen to them, and be faced with a huge loss. There's a lot of money involved, Ms. Cal.
Some people call that a gravity upgrade.
For some people, I imagine it is. Well, this last week, Ginny, my wife, I must have been working on getting a gravity upgrade because she was carrying a water bottle in her purse. And normally these are pretty well, you know, screwed down and tightened up. Got home only to find out that her purse had become a swimming pool. And one of the casualties of that was that her iPhone 6 Plus, which I had bequeathed to her, was now not working.
No life preserver, eh?
Yeah, it was working, but it had weird things like the volume control, you know, the one that shows you where it's was stuck in the middle of the screen. It was obviously damaged. And long story short, we live in the Royal Oak area, and I had to travel up Woodward Avenue to AT&T because she needed to get it replaced right away. And in the process, went in and got her an iPhone 7 Plus, which she now is complete, which is water
resistant,
which means it'll take a little bit of dampness. Well, as I was in there with this damaged iPhone 6 Plus, the people at AT&T said, you know, you could get this fixed if you went up the row here a couple of stores.
Pray tell where?
To a place called You Break, I Fix. And I thought, that is kind of the theme of our lives here.
That's an awesome name.
Isn't it? Because it certainly is the kind of thing that we face when people bring their equipment to us. With us right now is assistant manager at You Break, I Fix in Royal Oak, Chris Fronius. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you, sir. Appreciate the time.
Chris, who came up with that wonderful name?
His name is Justin Witherhill. He started the business in 2009 down in Florida. He's the originator of the whole business. And I met him once, actually, a couple months ago during a small get-together due to the success of the stores in Michigan. And he just started at his garage with a bunch of guys he knew, and it blew up. It got real big. We got 300 stores plus nationwide right now, a couple out-of-country stores. And we are just running the Michigan division.
Gotcha. Right. And matter of fact, let's talk just kind of quickly in terms of how I saw that there are 5 stores in the Metro Detroit area. Am I right?
Yep. 5 stores up, Royal Oak being the mother store. And then we have Troy, Sterling Heights, Bloomfield, and Southfield.
Okay. The majority of them on the west side of town. How about through the rest of the state of Michigan? Because we have affiliates, you know, all over the state of Michigan.
We're currently working on a 10-store plan. The 10-store plan is in effect, and hopefully, and I don't want to speak on too much I'm not entirely sure of, but I believe they want them up by 2020. When we're expanding currently right now, we're looking at other markets and other neighborhoods just to try to get in, because I personally want to be back on the east side of the state where I'm, you know, native to. Driving all this way is kind of a pain, as I'm sure most understand. 696 is under construction, or 75 is under construction for the next couple of years.
Yeah.
But we're working on getting more stores up because we have a big demand to meet for the state. It's apparent that we're effective in the neighborhoods, so we want to help everybody we can in as many places as we can.
Is it a franchise opportunity, or is this a corporate-owned? Okay. So if someone wanted to get involved with it, I guess they would go to UFix, ubreakifix.com, and you can find out information about that?
Yeah, it's all through the corporate entities, and then they'll try to set you up the best they can with all the equipment, the know-how, the knowledge, the training. It really comes full package.
Wow. Now, I'm going to guess that you're dealing with the whole range of smartphones there, not just Apple, iPhones, but all the rest of them, right? So what do you handle?
The whole spectrum. We try our absolute best to be entirely knowledgeable on almost every device from, I saw 1990 Sony Walkman video recorder come in the first couple weeks we opened the store, down to tasers. We did a taser at one point in time to all cell phones of all spectrum, Samsung, Nokia, the old brick ones, anything with information that's valuable to you and you need to have saved. That's what our goal is.
And by the way, I want to testify, folks, this is from personal experience, that the phone that I brought in, the 6 Plus, Chris and his company there, was able to clean up. The water damage was the primary problem, right, Chris?
The water damage was causing some shorts on the motherboard, causing the phone to do things sporadically.
Yep.
And we had to get that out of there.
Okay, and once you fix that, I'm noticing now there was a little damage on the screen, and that probably is going to be a permanent damage. But beyond that, I'm seeing everything else, all the other applications that are part of the phone are working just fine.
I'm glad to hear that, actually, because a lot of the times water damage can be so severe that a lot of the functions just fade out, or you might all of a sudden call or text somebody you really wish you wouldn't have. And we've heard all the horror stories. So water damage does cause those problems.
Wow.
It's nice to know that it's not consistent with yours. Even after the damage.
Yeah. One of the things that you did, and guys, this has impressed me, was the You Break, I Fix. Was that they were able to get the data that was on my wife's phone off and get that sent up to the cloud so that she could reinstall it. Because the AT&T store employee that I talked to said, I'm sorry, we can't do that. Because I had walked in with this damaged one and was hopeful that they could simply take the information like her contacts and things like that off of here and put them onto the phone. And they said, sorry, we can't do that. And Chris Fronius, by the way, who is the assistant manager at the You Break, I Fix store in Royal Oak, is our guest. You guys were able to do that, though. Is that something unique to your company, that you're able to get that kind of data off?
I wouldn't say it's unique. I'm sure there are plenty of people out there, and if they're out there, please come and apply. We want good people who know what they're doing. Sorry to plug. But, there's a lot of people out there who do these kinds of things, and some in businesses, some just do it on the side. But most of the time, and I don't want to rip on major companies out there, but some of them, and most of them, are salesmen, and that is their forte. Mm. Therefore, they're to sell you things and not necessarily repair. They don't have your best interest in mind, as repair would be your best interest, as that's how we get paid. We don't sell phones here or anything like that. We just have the interest of repair in mind. So again, back to the point of we try to have every aspect of repair. We try to know as much as we can so we can try to service the public to the best of our ability.
Chris, you don't want to go prospect for good employees at AT&T because they couldn't fix it for Foster and Jenny.
As a former AT&T employee myself, and I was, I didn't work for the mobile. I worked for the, I was a cable guy, and it was great. They have all the latest products, and that's great. They have all the greatest, stuff, the newest stuff. But again, their interest is strictly to sell you a phone. So that's the difference. And don't get me wrong, I'm a sales guy too. But at the same time, I can only fix what you have in order to get paid. They can sell you a new one.
Yep.
We just don't have that option. And that's why we must keep your best interest, which is repair.
And I have
and they told Foster a little bit. They told Foster about you after they sold.
Yes.
Of course.
That was carefully orchestrated. Oh, by the way.
Oh, yeah. You're leaving the store. Pardon us while we maybe give you a solution.
That's exactly it. Well, and in this particular case, I had to take it because my wife had some critical stuff that was on the phone that she needed to take care of. And as quickly as you guys worked, and by the way, you worked very quickly at this, of drying it out and getting that data back, it was still, unfortunately, not fast enough for her, so I ended up buying the 7 Plus. But Cal.
Hey, Chris, got a question for you, and if it's not putting you on the spot, what sort of warranty do you offer on these repairs that you do do?
Everything we do has a quarter-year, 90-day warranty. We pretty much will insure the part itself for malfunction or any sort of defects, which, you know, if anything is broken or damaged on our parts, obviously, that would void that. But as far as defects go, if you can't touch your screen at day 89 and it's 2 in the morning and you don't know what to do and you call me and leave me a message, I will extend your warranty to allow you time to bring it in and I can take care of you.
That's great. It sounds like service is something that's very important. You mentioned about getting techs to work for. Where do you recruit your techs from?
Well, we don't necessarily recruit. It's kind of, you got to have a good customer service base. And I mean, knowing something about this business is great, but nobody's ever walked into this kind of a job field and said, hey, I've done this before. You know, it's very few and far between who can say they have. So we look for people who, you know, can be customer service oriented first. I can teach anybody how to fix almost anything, but I can't teach you how to be presentable in front of people to be effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a challenge. Chris Fronius, by the way, is our guest. He's the assistant manager at You Break, I Fix. And if you want to find out more about that, youbreakifix.com is the number. You can go to internetadvisor.net and look on our show notes as well to find out more information about that. Currently in the Metro Detroit area, although, as Cal, you found out, it's a franchise business, and you can maybe you're interested in opening up one of these franchises and expanding, for instance, to the Grand Rapids area. I imagine you'd have a good business out there with the plenty of smartphones that are in use in the western part of our state.
Well, on that note, actually, we do have a business out there in Grand Rapids currently right now.
Oh, good.
So that territory has been taken. So okay. I'm sorry to get anybody's hopes up, but other territories are accessible. You just have to access our corporate offices and see what's available out there.
Okay.
Anybody who knows this anybody who would do this would see this is a very good business opportunity as far as what the world is like now when everyone needs their cell phones. It's a crucial part of our lives now.
Right.
And, you know, the repairs are just consistent. So everybody does something to it every other day.
Well, I want to thank you for doing a great job of taking care of my wife's phone. It is fixed right now and working just fine. Of course, there's a little bit of screen damage, but I have to tell you folks that if all the repairs had been done that Chris quoted me on this, it still would have cost us, the quote was about $150, and that is, when you take a look at what phones cost nowadays, a very reasonable price for getting a phone back up and working as well as this is right now. Chris Fronius, thank you so much for being with us. And the company, again, is YouBreakIFix.com. And you'll find this particular store on Woodward Avenue in Royal Oak between 13 and 14 Mile Road. Thanks again, Chris, for being with us. And good luck to you and the company.
Thank you, sir. Have a great night.
All right. Take care. Well, it's that time in our program when we invite Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News, to join us and talk about some of the headlines that he gathers throughout the week. Mike, thanks so much for joining us here on our podcast, The Internet Advisor.
Well, thanks, Foster, for having me. I continue to enjoy this wonderful Michigan weather. Thank God for global warming or whatever it is, right? So normally it's not this warm in October, you know?
You know, I haven't even broken out the snowblower yet or put away the lawnmower.
I mean, the trees around Ann Arbor really haven't started to change yet, you know? So Halloween's coming up fast.
Yeah, Gary down there in Florida, do you miss fall, Gary? I'm curious, with all of the palm trees and everything else that's that you're enjoying in Fort Lauderdale?
I think coconuts fall this time of year, don't they?
That was, I think Irma took care of all the coconuts. There's a coconut tree.
We're all down.
But I don't miss it.
Don't miss it.
He doesn't miss it. Yes, he does. He's lying, I think.
I'm sitting here in the boat. The whole back of the boat's open, and it's a beautiful breeze blowing through, and I'm in shorts and flip flops and.
Oh dear.
Well, Gary,
suffering.
Gary, I got to ask the magic question because this came up a few weeks back. Did you get rid of all the sand?
Oh yes.
No, not yet. Every once in a while, we still find sand. You know, 90-mile-an-hour winds blowing that sand into the boat. Oh. There's seven complete washes and then some spot washes, and yeah, we're still finding sand. I found some not last night, but the night before. I was cleaning up some things and went, oh my God, look at all this sand running out.
All right, let's get to the headlines here in the state of Michigan. Oh, actually, throughout the country as well. But your headline, one of the ones we're looking at right now, Mike, is that the Department of Defense is awarding $2.23 million to a Southeast Michigan agency to help defense contractors to diversify.
Yeah, one thing I discovered the last couple of weeks, I've been talking to people, I did not realize there are 100,000 defense workers here in Michigan, 100,000. And so a lot of these defense contracts are winding down or phasing out or whatever. And so what they're trying to do is come up with training and coaching and all that, so some of these defense contractors can take all those great skills and put them more in the civilian sector so that they don't have to downsize, lay people off, and all that jazz. So it's a 13-county area that's being covered, essentially southeast Michigan. Mm-hmm. The Workforce Intelligent Network is going to be marshaling these funds and doing this talent relevance to the defense industry, all these sorts of things like that, to tell them, well, just because defense contracts aren't there or are going down, there are other opportunities for you. So that's a good thing, right? Because 100,000 jobs, I was amazed. I didn't realize there was that many.
Wow. And you said they're winding down?
Well, some of them. Some of these contracts are winding down. It depends on where you're at. But TACOM, we have some major installations here in the area, including TACOM. Now, that's pure Army, but, I mean, some of the civilian, we have a lot of stuff in aerospace and other industries like that, and some of those deals are not as robust as they were because of the funding situation.
Mm. Gotcha.
So, again, this is more of a preventative kind of thing. Hey, don't get down on yourself if the contract's going down. There's other opportunities in the civilian sector, and so this is sort of an educational thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, now, you talk, Mike, when you say civilian sector, these people are in the civilian sector.
There's other work outside of the military is what I'm saying.
Right,
so,
the company itself isn't going to have as many military.
Yeah, right, yeah. So they can reach beyond the military for this work, and so Wynn and some of these other groups are going to help them find out and identify where they can apply their skills.
Somebody who's been in the news because of his continuing efforts to rehabilitate Detroit, I guess, in some ways, Mr. Dan Gilbert. I see a headline here. The Michigan Growth Capital Symposium has nominated him for...
No, actually, Michigan Venture Capital Association.
Ah, okay, Michigan Venture Capital Association has nominated him for an award.
Well, a lot of awards for a lot of people, but I picked a couple of the real big names that folks would recognize right away, and certainly Dan has one of those. And then our old buddy David Brophy, that does run the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium and has been doing that for, more than 30 years now. His organization or his symposium is up for awards, too. And all those awards will be done at the dinner, at the annual dinner, which is in November, and at Little Caesars Arena. Now, I have not been in there yet, so I will be there with bells on because I'm really excited about seeing what that looks like on the inside. And I will be shooting video of the winners. But he's just a nominee. He's not a winner yet. They have Entrepreneur of the Year nominees. They have Capital Event of the Year nominees. That's, you know, or a big exit or something like that.
Yeah.
Community Impact Award, that's where the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium is, but so is Techstars Mobility and so is Accelerate Michigan. Those are three very worthy nominees. I mean, Accelerate Michigan alone is a $1 million contest, right? And then we got the Lifetime, like all organizations, Lifetime Achievement Awards. You have Ian Bund, Mike Janiernoa, and Judy Vanderwell, who all three of them I know very well. And Ian Bunn is the who actually started the Michigan Venture Capital Association, I think, 15 years ago. So he's kind of like the godfather. But I mean, it'll be a great, and it's like old home week for me. I know all these people, and it'll be a lot of fun to go to that event at Little Caesars Arena.
Excellent. Final headline that I'm seeing here is kind of an interesting one. Supported Intelligence, which is a company, is partnering with U of M engineering students to develop connected vehicle traffic management tools.
Yeah, Patrick Anderson has a company on the side called Supported Intelligence. Everybody knows Patrick because he's the one that does all these surveys and analysis and all that for different things. And this one is a analytics software program. And what the kids at U of M are going to do, the students at the U of M are going to do, is look at how that can be used to, it's almost like an AI, artificial intelligence program, so you can better manage traffic control. Now, as we move forward into this, what we think is going to be the autonomous vehicle world, where all this communication is going to be going on via computer and these machines are going to be driving our vehicles, he's trying to get out ahead of this with this particular product. And so the U of M students are providing pro bono support, meaning free, to see if it actually has commercial value and this can be done. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Excellent. Sounds great. By the way, folks, Mike Brennan has been reporting on technology for many, many, many years here in the state of Michigan for newspapers and now with MI Tech News. And twice a week, if you're a subscriber to MITechNews.com, you'll be receiving some headlines like this, plus audio and video resources. Like, for instance, a version of our program will be on that program, as well as IT in the D and M Squared TechCasts, which is a program that Mike and Matt Rausch do on Mondays on the Podcast Detroit Network. All that goodness is how much? How many dollars is that, Mike?
Well, it's free for the audience as long as the sponsors continue to underwrite it.
That's pretty good. Cal.
Yeah, so and we've got a lot of really cool stuff coming up. Actually, I'm going to be partnering with Cloud Tech One to put out an event in April called IoT Tech Connect, one-day event, where we're going to feature all the Michigan great IoT products and services. And we're lining up speakers right now, talking to a lot of organizations. I just met with M-City. About coming on board. I think Planet M is going to come on board. Some of these other, that Planet M is the one the governor announced a year ago, and they just created a launch pad downtown a couple weeks ago, where all these autonomous vehicle startups will be able to work together and collaborate and that sort of thing. So big focus on that.
We'll keep on looking at more of those details as we go on. Mike, thanks so much for being with us. MITechNews.com, absolutely free. Get your edition. Coming back next hour is Mr. Ed Rudell's turn to talk about crack. That is what it is and how to save yourself from the dangers that are involved in that crack virus. Coming up on the Internet Advisor in hour number two. Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, who's down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Ed Rudell next to me in studio here, and Cal Carson as well, who's running the board. We got a great program continuing for you. In this particular hour, we're going to be answering questions that you folks have posed and also talking about crack. Not the kind that is the drug, but the kind that is the virus. All that's coming up in the Internet Advisor. Well, it's time for me to hand the podium over to Mr. Ed Rudell, because as we were talking about it off mic, this is the segment that you're going to be contributing to, in particular, talking about this crack problem. Crack being a synonym for, or the...
A synonym for key reinstallation attack.
Key reinstallation attack,
yep.
Which is something that was discovered a couple weeks ago that has actually been discovered a while further back than that, I think.
Yeah, it was only announced a few weeks
ago. It was announced a few weeks ago, typically. It's a virus that attacks...
No, it's not a virus. It's a vulnerability or...
Vulnerability. Security. There
yep.
we go.
Yep.
That attacks the routers in particular?
It attacks the people that are using routers.
Okay.
It's a vulnerability that allows
somebody
to exploit it. Right.
That's the word I was looking for. Yep.
Just for the fun of it, Ed, could you please explain for the layman the difference between a virus and a vulnerability?
Well, a virus is basically something that's embedded on a computer or a tablet or a mobile phone, and it's a piece of software that runs. This vulnerability basically is something that's been discovered in either an operating system and a piece of code that that hackers use to actually take advantage of, to bypass security, and then impregnate. Did I say impregnate? Yeah, impregnate it with a virus.
All right.
Trying to think of another insert of virus.
You're talking about crack and impregnation. Okay.
Are we sure this is a computer?
This is the Internet Advisor, yeah. So, I mean, and insert a virus on whatever
there
platform they're going on, whether or not it's a server, a phone, a PC, a Mac, or whatever. So that's the difference between a vulnerability. The hackers have to get in. A vulnerability could be something as simple as, using stupid passwords, like password.
That's true. One, two, three,
or using
password.
Default passwords.
So a vulnerability is lack of knowledge and someone found an opportunity they could take advantage of. A virus is they specifically went out
what they can do with that opportunity.
To do something malicious.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
By the way, I represent, I guess, the dummies in the audience, the people who don't quite understand. When I heard that this was something that affects routers and Wi-Fi, portals and things like that, I thought, what can I do about that? How can I protect myself if it's already embedded, if this vulnerability is in my Wi-Fi router?
Wi-Fi. And that's a good point. The good news is that Microsoft, Apple, the people that discovered this, and that would be Matthew Van Hoff, was it KU Leuven?
Okay.
It sounds almost French, basically, of KU Leuven. They discovered the vulnerability. They notified the governments. They notified the manufacturers way before they made the public announcement, giving time to Microsoft, Apple, the people of Linux, Cisco, IBM, all these manufacturers, giving them time to develop patches. So Microsoft and Apple released their patches around October 10th, a week before the vulnerability was even announced by the security experts. So that's good.
So this is...
Gary, what are you going to...
Yeah, and also we don't know, or at least I haven't heard, that there's been anyone that has actually exploited this vulnerability.
No,
they found it, they patched it without any bad guys doing anything that we know of that has been reported.
Excellent point, Gary.
Yeah.
The thing is, this is just the cooperation of these researchers to get a hold of the proper people and then make the announcement. They found this vulnerability, and it's really it's kind of neat how it works. What they do is, you know how when you're in hotels and you have the ability to walk around the hotel, and when you first register, you may register with the password that they give you at the front desk. Once you do that, you can go through any of the floors. You could go through the casino. Not all hotels have casinos. But you can go all over the place, and you're never asked for that password again. Where you're being passed from one wireless router to another wireless router to another wireless router. And when that passover happens, that's the vulnerability. Is when you're walking between these. So what the hackers do is they're listening to wireless networks. They capture a snippet of the wireless code, which is encrypted, but they know the places because the packets of information that they gather, they know that this section comes from the router. This is the destination. It's all encrypted, but they know if they just snip this part out and snip another part in, then what they do is they're basically telling the person as they're walking from one spot to another, they're basically saying, I'm the next wireless router. You can connect to me.
Mm-hmm.
So you could be just sitting there and someone's listening to your wireless signal.
So it's kind of like the man in the middle attack.
It is the man in the middle attack, and except what they're doing is they're passing themselves off as a wireless router.
Now, guys,
like Gary said, this is all theoretical. There's no practical. There's no. No one's ever run across a virus that took care of this, or you know, arrested anyone for this yet.
Okay, it doesn't look like anybody took advantage of it. But one of the things I heard, and guys, confirm this or deny it for me if you would. I had heard that
crack kills. That's wrong subject.
That if you will, cheaper routers and cheaper Wi-Fi devices that you might get, like a knockoffs, are not as likely to have done the upgrades necessary to protect themselves as would maybe some of the bigger brands like a Linux or an ASUS or one of the other. Does that make sense, guys? Does that sound like it's right?
Well, you know, I'm looking at a website right now, and there are a number of CNET's doing a good job in Windows Central, and they published a list of these are the manufacturers that were notified and have already started releasing updates for their wireless routers. And there's a number of them on here. Cisco Linksys.
Now, these updates are done via a firmware update that you would do to the router.
I would guess, yes.
Correct. But what unclear is whether or not many people get their wireless routers from their cable provider. So are the cable providers pushing wireless updates?
I know one of them.
New to us, and I'm sure they're on top of it. I hope they're on top of it.
Yeah.
But none of us really thought about this. We were thinking about the OSs. We're thinking about the routers, but then all of a sudden, wait a second, what are our cable manufacturers doing?
Yeah, but look at it from this perspective, too. I just thought about this while we were talking. How far back are the manufacturers of routers going? Because if you have an older wireless router, are you going to get a firmware update to close that up? Or if they decided we're not supporting it, so therefore, do you know which ones you need to get rid of and upgrade to a new one, or what?
You know, we're going to have to follow up on this.
Yeah.
Really, because it's so new that there's a lot of questions to be answered. My wireless router does automatic updates.
Yep. Well, along those lines, and before the program, Gary, and you and I were talking about this, you mentioned the fact that there's a certain amount of vulnerability in the system because people have shut off their automatic updates in a lot of cases.
That's right. And when they're notified, almost nobody, I don't believe any reasonable person would say, no, don't tell me if you have an upgrade. But a lot of people say, no, I'm going to pick and choose the time and the day that I'm going to upgrade because I may be getting on my computer and I need to do something right away and I don't want to be stuck with an inadvertent unscheduled update. So a lot of people do that. What we need to make sure is that if you do say, no, tell me when there's an update, that you go ahead then at the most, you know, at the very first reasonable time that you can, like right away, if possible, then go ahead and do the upgrade manually. Mm. But you need to make sure that you stay on top of it. You can't be, you know, waiting 2-3 weeks because a lot of these updates or bug fixes, patches are security patches.
Now, if you remember years ago, we used to use a wireless security called WEP, W-E-P. And remember, and we thought that was okay until someone actually released a hack that could actually bust it under 60 seconds by continuously throwing information at it and doing something similar. But and now this crack is basically targeting WPA2, which many of us think of as the successor of WEP security. And, you know, we'll see if they're able to have this survive or not, if this WPA2 survives this vulnerability.
Well, let's make sure we understand, too. Nobody's attacking anything, right?
Correct.
This is a good program. It's a good protocol. Is a better way to put it.
Yeah.
It's a good protocol, and people are continuing to look at it and to try to make it the very best it can, and that's by going in and see if they can hack it. And that's what they did. they're not trying to hack the old stuff because who cares? Nobody uses it anymore.
Yeah. Excellent.
Right.
Okay.
As you said, we're going to keep our eye on this because it is still a developing story, but it sounds like it's also important to make sure that you're open to having those updates done and the firmware updates in particular. I'm going to check on that on your modem. Back in just a minute to answer your questions. Hi, Foster Brown here again, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. And we are answering questions that you folks have posed. And by the way, the only way that's going to happen when we're doing our podcast versus the live show is that you send us your questions on email. And that's very simply done, going to internetadvisor.net. And then in the upper right-hand corner, you see a Contact Us button. Click on that, and that will allow you to send an email with as generous a description of your problem as you possibly can give. And that's always important. For instance, if you've got a machine that's giving you problems, give us some idea what the operating system is you're running, how old the machine is, you know, some more details so that when it comes time for us to try to unravel the problem you're having, we can take a good shot at that because we haven't got the advantage of having the dialogue that we have when we're doing a program where you're calling in and we can ask follow-up questions. So, but it is the way when we're doing a podcast that you get to have some answers to your questions. So this is a good time for you to get on the email, send us your questions, and then during the week, Cal and Ed and Gary and I will take a crack at answering those questions. And sometimes having a little more time to consider the answers is a good thing, right, Eddie? You get a little...
Yeah, I get to, you know, eat dinner and think about it.
Yeah. And look up some other information as well. Well, Cal, you have been doing, typically getting people's questions throughout the week. Friends, families, and fellow workers have come to you with their broken devices and say, help, oh guru.
You know, typical to poor Gary Chagrin, I haven't gotten a Mac question all week because, after all, they just work. What can I say? No, I'm just kidding. But I've noticed a phenomenon, which is really weird, and it happened to me this week, and I had at least four people contact me with situations like this. I turned my computer on yesterday and it worked fine. I turned it on today and I've got a black screen and it's not doing anything. And in most cases, of the three of the four cases that I have, all three of them were hard drive problems. And I was like, oh, this is really good. You know, we love hard drive problems because it's always a great mystery with it. And the first thing I do is when I get the machine is I want to take a look at it and see, well, maybe it's just, you know, CMOS. You need to be able to reset that so it'll see the drive and boot right up. And in three of these cases, it wasn't CMOS and the drive wouldn't boot right up. So then my next question is to the person who gave me the computer. Mm-hmm. I think there's a problem with your hard drive for sure. And before I get going on any fixes, do you have a backup?
Uh-huh. And the answer is?
Well, when they have the deer in the headlights look on their face, and they look at you, and they just kind of go, what then? Or the really intelligent ones will say, what's a backup?
Ooh.
You know you got a problem.
Oops. And to be honest with you, by the way, this week, a woman who was part of a group that I'm involved with brought me her computer, her laptop, a VAIO laptop, by the way, Ed, fairly recent. Anyway, she said, I've got this problem and things are locked up much the same way as you're talking about. And so when I said, okay, two questions, and one of them was, did you back up your material? Because the simplest thing to do, and she's running system Windows 8.1, is to simply go back to factory settings.
Yep.
So I said, have you backed up the material on it? No. After that deadly pause, and there was that deadly pause that says, we got a problem here, Houston. And it was that she hadn't backed up.
Well,
and so it's going to be a challenge. The first thing I've got to do is try to extract her pictures and documents and things like that.
Of the three that are having this drive problem, I did, on the way to the studio here, get a call from one of them. They said, I found the backup drive.
Hallelujah.
I said, terrific. When was the last time you used it? And they said, when you set it up for me.
Hey.
3 years ago.
Oh, ouch.
Now, good news and bad news. Good news is a lot of the legacy stuff that they had they wanted to keep, specifically things like pictures of her daughter when she graduated from high school and all those neat stuff, are on that backup. So we'll be able to restore those back. But things that happened from 3 years back to now may be off in the vaporware. Yeah. Now, I've already started to try and recover it.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff is actually coming back. A lot of it is being fought because the drive assembly itself is going,
Literally.
So I told her I'd keep hacking at it and see what I can do to try to get it back for her. But it is, I bring this subject up because every couple of months it happens.
Yep.
People start, you know, having problems with hard drives and they have no way of recovering their data. And it's so important that periodically you got to do a backup.
You know, your sound effects there reminded me that so many computers nowadays are coming with solid state drives.
Oh.
And basically when those go,
Party is over.
The party's over.
Oh, because, yeah, you're right. There's nothing to boot up again.
That lovely skipping of the record noise that Cal did a few moments ago was was basically the head slapping back and forth trying to find a certain tract or sector, and it goes, you know, and we're used to that.
Yeah, but,
The days of mechanical drives are almost numbered.
That's true.
Yeah, and they're starting to being able to recover some of those SSD drives, but just like with the mechanical drives, how much is that data worth to you?
Yeah.
Because you could have spent $80, got a little external USB drive, plugged it in, and backed up on a regular basis. Or if that data is really important to you, you could spend starting about $600 going up from there to get some company to go in and actually try and get that data.
The people that are coming to you were Mac. These were Macs, or was it Avaya?
No, I had the Vio.
You had the Vio. Gary, now Gary's, are you still using a Surface, Gary? Because if I recall, you basically are using Office 365, and you've touted that basically everything's in the cloud for you.
That's right. I don't keep anything on the Surface, and not because you couldn't, because you certainly can. You use it just like a regular computer if you want to. But why? Right? The internet is so ubiquitous that just put everything in the cloud. Somebody else back it up for you.
Right, so that's one backup method.
Yeah.
That's right, cloud-based storage. And let's try and clarify that for the novice people out there so they'll know what that means. Cloud-based storage is storage that's done by someone else, some company somewhere that you connect to over the internet with your computer, and they put a program on your computer that periodically goes out, looks at all the files on your computer and says, this one changed, this one changed, this one changed. I'm going to back these ones up.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a backup solution. Gary uses basically cloud-based storage.
His hard drive?
As his hard drive. Do you have a sync folder? Is that how it works, Gary?
I don't ever allow anything to be backed up onto the computer itself.
Yeah, you basically back up to the OneDrive or store all your documents to the OneDrive. And if you're not connected to the internet, the next time it does, it Microsoft, because it's a Microsoft OneDrive, it'll basically synchronize everything. And you could certainly do that with...
you can do that with Dropbox.
You can do it with Google.
You can do it. Yep. And even the backup services that back up your information.
They basically do
the same thing.
Right.
They
crash plan.
And pull it. Crash plan, Mozy, Carbonite.
Right.
All of those different services are internet services that are backing up your data in the cloud. The difference in what Gary does and those other things that I talked about is that Gary can actually work on that data that's up in the cloud where the other ones are backing it up. So you have to retrieve it, work on it, and then put it back up there.
Right. So it depends on your – Gary, the key with yours is that it depends on having a good connection to the internet all the time or whenever you want to use that.
Or it just saves it on my hard drive, and as soon as I connect next time, it'll automatically go up. I turn autosave on. I don't even save my documents anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if a hurricane comes through or something.
Yeah. Yeah, the computer saves it for me. Why would I need to save it?
You know, and that's sort of...
If it goes away, it saves the very last version. And then when I go back in again or it connects again, then it goes up to the cloud. But this way I can use it on my phone, on my tablet, on my computer, on somebody else's computer, on work computer, or my home computer. It doesn't really matter. I can get to it mm-hmm. anywhere.
You know, and again, this is through OneDrive, right, Ed?
OneDrive, yeah.
Well, I was just saying,
it comes with Office 365.
Right.
And so my email is backed up the same way.
I was going to say that what Microsoft has done is with Office 365 is for a fixed dollar per month or a fixed rate per year, Office 365, it does all of that magic that Gary's talking about. And this is one of the things I really thought, you know, wow, that's almost Apple-ish. That's Apple-like. That's something Apple should have done. Does Apple offer a backup solution like that or internet or backup? They offer iCloud backup, right?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so they do.
So you can do basically the same thing with iCloud that you can do with OneDrive in the Apple environment. And I believe it's the same way with in the Google environment if you happen to have an Android device
mm-hmm.
and that sort of thing.
Or even if you don't have an Android device.
Right.
You can go to the was it Google Cloud or, it's just a Google app. I'm just trying to see if I can find it. Anyway, you can save it.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you have an Android device.
Yeah, it's just called
Google Drive.
Google Drive.
We all had a senior moment there just for an instant. Forgive us.
It's called Google Drive.
Well, you know, I think it was the hard drive. It just kind of moved back. The head sat back for a second, just waited.
I know. I had to pinch myself to pull that a piece of information out of my hat. So.
But the important message I'm trying to put out there is this, and that is whether you use the online services, whether you do anything manually as a backup, do some sort of backup somewhere, somehow.
Yeah.
Whether you have it, it's best to do the automated one because you never have to remember to do it, but it comes with a little bit of a price. Or if you're disciplined enough and you can remember to do it yourself, put a little reminder in your calendar, hey, it's time to back up, then you can do it that way. Or the other way is, if you think you need to back up, you probably need to back up. And if you can't remember when you last backed up, you probably need to back up.
And a part of the other continuing part of that good news is that in many cases, the resources for backing up are free. There's a lot of free stuff on the internet right now. For instance, Google offers you, I don't know how big there's a lot of space. So, matter of fact, Gary, I think with OneDrive, there's a huge amount of space that you're offered up there to store your material. So
yeah, and the price is cheap, so you know, you might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah, for nothing, it's real cheap. Coming back to answer more of your questions that you posed here to us on the Internet Advisor in just a moment with our team. So glad that you're joining us here on our program, the Internet Advisor. And to those of us listening to us on our affiliates through the Talk Network in Michigan and Town Square Media, thank you very much for joining us. Glad to have you along for the ride. And we were delighted a couple weeks ago to find out that there's a whole lot of people who are listening to us on our affiliates out there. And glad to be able to offer you some fresh programming here on the Internet Advisor. Our second hour of the program is one where we try to get your questions and during the week, chew on them a little bit and get some answers for you. So, number one, you got to get those questions to us. And the way you do that is by going to the homepage, internetadvisor.net. Click on that Contact Us button, and it's in the upper right-hand corner there. And send us an email with your concerns, like somebody who did for you, Ed, that you picked up. Mark. Was a person who got in touch.
I was
with
on
you.
The wrong page there, Mark. Yeah. So basically, let's see. He said, "Where's his?" That's my answer. Where's his question?
Oh.
So I have the. Oh, Mark, there it is.
You are so good that you answered a question without even looking.
It's on the second
page. Okay, so there it is.
Yep.
He's getting basically difficulties upgrading, receiving the Microsoft Windows updates. And this is especially important now because Microsoft released that...
Creator's Edition.
Well, yeah. The Creator's Edition last week as well. And that Crack Attack that we were talking about was released October 10th.
So you want
silently.
Both of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And Microsoft are sort of sneaking those in there. But he's basically receiving an error message. I keep getting an error message, 0800737, 712 after I start the install. It never gets past 14%. I hope you can answer that. And basically, what I told him is Microsoft has a lot of articles. So when I'm looking up errors in Windows operating systems, I typically use Bing and I type in Windows Update error and then I type the error message.
By the way, for people who don't know what Bing is.
Oh, Bing.com. That's Microsoft's search engine.
Right.
So you could Bing it instead of Google it. You know,
right. And it's, by the way, it provides sometimes quite different results or different shading of results than Google does.
Would Correct. You say that it's slightly slanted toward Microsoft?
I would say that the ads aren't touted towards. If you type in a Microsoft question on a Google, you might get more ads and confuse what you click on.
Okay.
Put it that way.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So and I get more better Microsoft answers when I go to Bing.com. So, but basically, have you tried the following suggestions at Microsoft's website? So this error message basically sounds like the files that you attempted to download from Microsoft or that the Windows update attempted to download has become corrupted. And Microsoft has several utilities that they provide on their website that you can use to fix this. They have some fix-it utilities that you could just click on.
I love those, by the way.
That will go through and do four or five different things. Instead of reading through a manuscript, really mm-hmm. one or two pages of instructions. That
and I typically will miss a step.
And you typically, absolutely. I do the same thing. It's the ADD kicking in.
Yeah.
And I always want to skip to the end of the book, you know, find out what the results are. I can never go step one through eight. So Microsoft has Fix Windows Updates, Fix It Utility. They also have some other suggestions in there, and I sent him several links on this. One link is from a person who tried to all the Microsoft suggestions, and the computer still had the problem. Basically, the resolution suggested is to download the Windows 10 setup files onto a USB flash drive, reboot the computer so that it boots to the USB flash drive, and then reinstall Windows by running the setup, and this corrected the problem. It would not touch his original user files. It just dresses up Windows and fixes the Windows updates. Because when you run the setup files, Microsoft, the setup utility for Windows 10 will basically say, do you wish to... do you wish to install Windows and keep all your files? B, back up your files, and reinstall Windows, or C, just erase everything and fix it, and just have a clean install. So it progressively gets easier, and Microsoft sort of explains that. That's one method that you can use to correct it down. I'm trying to think of the analogy, you know, how big of a stick do you need to beat off a bear? You know, you just keep first I'll try throwing a stick at it and maybe by the time I'm done, I'm probably going to be swinging a 12-foot 2x4. I'm still going to end up dead in the end. But, that was a bad analogy. I'm not good at this.
That completely went into the weeds.
It did. I'm trying to think of an analogy. Okay. How big of a hammer do you need to pound in a nail?
Should I use a
10-ounce hammer? Or should I use a 16-ounce hammer, you know?
That sounds like you got that from your dad.
Yeah, well, or should I use a sledgehammer?
use the hammer that works.
Well, what I like about that is it is the idea of being able to reinstall without touching the files.
Correct.
The existing files that a person has.
Now, another thing that, and I'm looking for the folder right now because there is a, Microsoft downloads all the Windows updates, and it downloads them into a folder underneath Windows, and I'm trying to recall what it is. I thought it was called Software Distribution. So this is something that we've been doing since Windows Vista.
95?
Windows Vista is Microsoft downloads all the Windows updates into a folder called C Windows and then the Software Distributions. So what we used to do in the old days is I would log in safe mode, And in Windows 10, you can still come up in safe mode. And then you go in there and you delete the contents of software distributions because that's where the corrupted file is.
Ah.
But the Microsoft Fixit utility does that same thing for you.
I love those. Mr. Fixit, I think it is. Little guy with a blue hat, I think.
No, it's a blue dress and a white hat.
There
Not
you
a
go.
Blue dress. I'm sorry.
Blue outfit.
Blue outfit. It would be Miss Fixit if it was a blue dress.
I think it's more of a misfit it.
Okay. Oh, dear.
Okay. And we had another question from Paul Sr.
Yes.
And
our friend in Houston.
He's in Houston. He used to live here in Bad Axe, Michigan.
Harbor Beach. Used to live.
And he basically said that he's playing solitaire. I get a message after playing some solitaire games every now and then. I tried to do Microsoft Solutions that says delete video drivers and update the video drivers. But my video card is basically on the motherboard, and I can't delete these easily. And so, because if you think about it, in the old days, we used to have desktop computers. Everyone had desktop computers.
Oh, yeah.
And I had my first portable computer is I put a handle on the top of my desktop computer and toted it to my boss. And I said, I finally got my portable computer. He did not think it was funny. And then the next week I got a laptop.
Hey, whatever works, baby.
Basically, in the old days, you used to have desktop computers, and a lot of the computers would ship with a cheap video card on the motherboard of the desktop, and you'd have more advanced video cards than the slots.
Yeah, right.
And that's what Paul's alluding
to. And for gamers, by the way, I think they still do that.
Correct.
They still use that that tactic of putting better cards in.
Even laptops now, they have one video card. They have multiple video cards in all laptops. But how do you delete that? So what I usually do is I find the computer icon in Windows 10 and right mouse click on it and select manage. So on your desktop, you have a computer icon.
It
used to be my computer. Right mm-hmm. mouse click, select manage, and then you'll have a device manager. Another way of getting in there is in the Cortana search, you can just type in device manager. And it'll bring up the Windows Device Manager, and that'll show all your devices. Mm. One of the display you got mice and keyboards and display drivers. That's the one you want to click on is the displays or video.
Display, okay.
And when you do that, you'll see the video cards. What I typically do is I just highlight them and delete. I just select it with my mouse and then strike the delete key. Microsoft will say, "Are you sure you wish to do this?" And I say, yes. And it's going to ask me, do you wish to delete the drivers as well? And I'll say, no, you don't have to delete the drivers. Keep them on the computer. First.
I see what you're saying.
Just remove the device, reboot your computer. It'll come up. Windows will rediscover the video card, and it'll reload the same drivers. And then test it to see if the problem is resolved. If the problem is resolved, then you probably had a corrupted video driver, and Microsoft has on the reboot, Microsoft has loaded what it thinks is the best video driver for the Windows operating system. Okay, so but if Paul Sr., if this does not correct your problem, what I would recommend is Microsoft is making a mistake. It's probably updated your video driver on your computer, and what you need to do is go to the manufacturer's website that built your computer and download their video driver. This happened to my daughter right before she went to London. She
had
a brand new computer, and she goes, "Dad, my sound isn't working properly on here. The audio jack isn't working. It worked when I bought the computer last week, but now I'm going to go on an airplane, and I want to plug the audio jack. It's not working." I said, "Well, Microsoft must have did an update. Go to the manufacturer's website, find your computer, and download the audio software." She did that. Boom, it worked.
Hmm.
So for some reason, you have to realize that
that's with a brand new computer.
Computers. Somehow a Microsoft update that you have to realize so many of these components are shared between so many of the different manufacturers that Microsoft has identified this component is number 265, whatever, and it's by Intel, and it's across these platforms. And so I'm going to release an update for all those users. Well, it just happened to disable the audio jack on the computer on hers. So she went back to the manufacturers.
Yep.
Boom. It fixed the problem.
Wow. So. Okay, Paul,
Foster, Paul's such a good friend. We could actually give him some higher-level advice as well. So don't you think? Like, you know, he can stop playing solitaire if he just find another friend.
I think they have some online games like that, too.
Paul, we got to tease you. And he does the same thing to us.
He does.
Oh, my
it's
goodness.
Fun.
He didn't blow away in the most recent hurricanes, thankfully. Yeah. He had moved down to Houston to be close to family. And he moved from the shores of what must seem like tranquil Lake Huron down to the wild shores of the Gulf. Paul, I hope that helps you. We'll be back in just a minute. We're going to wrap things up in our last segment, talking about more of the suggestions for you. And again, the way you get your questions to us is simply by going to internetadvisor.net and the Contact Us button. You put your question in there and we will get to work on solving it and then sharing it here on our podcast. Well, guys, this has been kind of a maiden voyage for us. And Cal, first of all, thank you so much for an excellent job done engineering. Cal's been behind the controls here as we are now kind of in a new phase, Gary. We've been counting on WJR's engineers to help us get the programs recorded, and now we're kind of on our own, and I'd say Cal has done a marvelous job.
Well, I can't take all the credit. Ed helped me get set up over here. He even was smart enough to bring in some handy post-it notes so I could mark things, and we got together and made sure everything was going to work just right. So I can't take all the credit myself. It's a team effort, as always, here.
As always.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, after 19 and three-fourths years of broadcasting, I don't think you can call anything maiden anymore. It has to be an old name. But I do agree, Cal's done a great job at that. He's got another career if he wants it.
Yeah, thank you so much, Cal, for doing that.
I think I'll go buy a boat first.
By the way, Gary, are you planning on coming back to the Detroit area at any point sometime, you know, docking the boat, or are you going to be continuing on down there?
Well, I won't be docking the boat up there, but I'm back and forth, you know, because I have some responsibilities for my day job up there as well. And do have a lot of family and friends in the area, so I'll be back and forth.
Well, I got to ask, Gary, because now Foster brought it up. How long would it take you to sail up here? Because you'd have to go up the coast and then come down the St. Lawrence Seaway, right?
Or up the Mississippi.
Yeah, so I won't be able to go across the Erie Canal because I'm too tall, at 22 feet tall. So I would have to go through the Welland. I'm not sure exactly, but it's called America's Great Loop, where you go up the intercoastal to Cape May in Delaware. You're about a day out in the Atlantic Ocean to get into New York Harbor, go up the Hudson, and come through the canal system. You can also go straight north through some locks and get in the St. Lawrence, or come across part of the Erie and then the Welland, and then through the Great Lakes, and then when you get around to Chicago, you go down I will not be able to go down the Chicago River, and we have a fixed bridge on the shipping canal of 19 and a half feet. So again, I couldn't take this boat.
So he's thought about it.
Go down, it's called America's Great Loop, and it'd be a wonderful, wonderful adventure. When I bought this boat, there's no way I'll be able to do it. And yeah. There's only one facility in all of the Great Lakes that's wide enough to pull out this boat. So I couldn't do a haul out in the Great Lakes. So it's destined to be down here. You know, it's a Caribbean island boat.
You wouldn't be able to go up the Mississippi. I was just curious because that's another.
Well, you don't go up the Mississippi because of the current, but you go down it. You know, once you get out the Chicago River to the Illinois, then you can go to the Mississippi, go down the Mississippi, and then it's intercoastal from New Orleans around. Or you can go up about a day up the Ohio River to the Tennessee and go down the Tennessee to the Big Bee Cut and down to the Big Bee Cut all the way to Mobile Bay. So there's a number of different routes.
Wow.
But this is a well-known and well-documented, and lots and lots of boaters do this a year. You want to spend about a year to do it.
Wow.
You don't want to be in the Great Lakes during the
He has given me some thought. That is cool.
I had a bottle of really cheap champagne to christen it with, but never mind.
you drank that anyway.
a couple of things that I found fascinating. This, you know, I like Apple. You know, I'm an Apple guy.
Okay.
But my God, I think we finally gotten to a point where it's like, really? Really? Apple is has an offer right now that on the 23rd of October, you can check and see if you're eligible for upgrade to an iPhone 10. And in addition to checking for your eligibility, you can also see if you qualify, are you ready for this, for a loan to purchase the iPhone.
You would need to take it out, yes.
I can't believe that. I mean, that's just, it's a phone, America. A phone? What? Well, a loan for a phone?
A loan? They're talking above $1,000 to start with. Am I right?
Yeah, easy, and you don't even get a case.
You almost need a mortgage.
So, have you ordered yours yet, Gary?
I need a mortgage.
In addition to that, the other thing that I noticed out on while I was roaming on the net this week, and this is kind of a flashback for me. It takes me back to the 90s. And there used to be, and you played this on a DOS machine, and it was a game called Wolfenstein. And it's a one-shooter game where you walk through a bunch of rooms and shoot at stuff and that sort of thing. And it's really fun to play, and we played hours upon hours upon hours upon hours of it at lunchtime at work. And
lunchtime, right?
Yes, of course. They now offer the same game free of charge through a web browser, any web browser you want to use, and you can play it over the web. And I guess we'll put the link out on our website later on.
Definitely.
I think it's because they're going to be relaunching another game, Wolfenstein game,
okay,
that's going to be 3D rendered.
Really?
Yes. And so this is why they're doing this. And I wish we had Shane in here to talk about this. I'm sure he's excited. But I remember, my personal memory of, we called it Wolfenstein, and we used this whenever we were working on computers to test the memory. Because we would run all the Microsoft tests, and then we would, the motherboard manufacturer's memory test, and we just let it run overnight, and it would say, oh, the memory's fine, you know, and we'd buy and trade memory, or test between, you know, does this memory work on this motherboard, and it would pass, you know, we'd set up the operating system, and then the person would play Wolfenstein, it would crash. So we started using Wolfenstein as a way of testing the memory because it worked it so hard that within 5 minutes, if the video game played for 5 minutes, you knew the memory was good.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it was great for testing it. Yeah, you tested memory. We tested video. We tested the audio.
Oh, yeah.
We tested ourselves. We just wanted to know whether or not it was working.
That's what I was doing at lunch.
Always at lunch.
Was it a shooter game?
Yeah, it was a shooter game.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then you could find little things, little pots of gold, extra, you know, bullets and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was basically one of those shooter-type games.
Yeah, one of the things that I saw on that fascinated me was that the Project Loon is now over Puerto Rico. You may have, I talked about it a little bit last week.
Yeah, that was the balloons with the Wi-Fi.
Yeah. It's Alphabet, which is the company that is the parent of Google, began this as part of Google's Project X. And now it's simply, I think it's called X Lab. In any case, they inflate these balloons and then they put them up into the stratosphere. And the object is that these, if they can get them working properly, they float over certain areas of the island and create a network that they can use for 5G internet connections. Not real fancy, you know, like texting and some other things. They are less, I'm going to say, enthusiastic about what they're accomplishing this week.
Right, but for this spot, but for the hurricane effort and what happened to Puerto Rico, that's perfect.
Absolutely. And I think it's fascinating if they can get this thing working. Apparently, they had tried it before in another situation when there had been some problems with a natural disaster. And this was the most recent attempt to get this Project Loon working. there are some kinks in it. And part of the kinks apparently are that the winds are pretty unpredictable. And they're
having
trouble.
I thought that was one of the reasons why they chose the stratosphere is because it's consistent, but...
But apparently there are currents up there that they have to deal with in order to keep these things fairly
geostationary.
And you
got to worry about flights. You got to be, you know, no fly zones.
Yep.
And
exactly. Yep. Exactly. But I still think it's fascinating, this whole Project Loon thing and providing...
Sounds kind of loony. But.
providing an instant response, or not an instant, but a very quick response to this very serious problem. Well, folks, thank you so much for being part of this... for us, an inaugural podcast for a new style of doing our program here. Cal, thank you again. Great job engineering. Eddie, good having you with us. Gary, thank you for being with us from
my pleasure
down in Fort Lauderdale. And for the rest of you, thank you for being with us here on the Internet Advisor.